You're in the middle of nowhere, with the day fading to a pale band on the horizon. From the descending dark, a bus pulls up, brightly lit inside, but with no name, no destination. The door shuttles open before you. There is no driver. Do you climb aboard? Of course you do. It's why you're here. Welcome to the Gray Line.
Today, we're headed to New York City, the Big Apple itself, the city that famously never sleeps. Today, we may get a clue as to why. Everybody knows that revenge is a dish best served cold, but it takes a certain kind of mind to factor the exact degree centigrade below zero at which vengeance becomes its own dark delicacy indeed. The sort of mind that belongs to your fellow traveler, that dapper older man with the salt and pepper mustache and unassuming wireless spectacles. A university professor and mathematician by trade, don't let Dr. Wilhelm Bell's mild-mannered appearance deceive you. Where his journey ends, we may get a tiny glimpse at the triangulation that can occur between mind, spirit, and the gray line.
As far as I could tell, it all started on a Thursday night, lower end of Broadway, within sight of the Flatiron. That's Don Peach's Fratelli's Club. He meets there most nights with his goons to talk business. You may wonder why they call him Don Peaches. Well, let's just say that peaches come in big, hard cans, and three of them in a pillowcase can be pretty unfriendly to a stoolie's head. At any rate, that's a story for later.
This news makes me disagreeable, and when I am disagreeable, it tends to make other people cry. You boys know what to do about it. I'll handle it, Don Peaches. I know I can count on you, Salvatore. But take Vincent with you and go in his minivan. Let's keep this under the radar, capiche? After all, there's no glory in addressing a math teacher. Ah, Don, do we have to? I mean, Vinnyman's fine, but the minivan... Can't we at least take my Toronado? It's black, and it's got that funny Mafia staff car bumper sticker.
Yeah, and I hate to say it, but Bell was our math teacher back when we was in college. Sally here had dreams of being a numbers guy, back before we both flunked out.
Shut up, Vinny, man. I am in no mood, the both of you. This Bell guy threatens our entire organization. I expect to hear from you within the hour. Freaking Vinny man in his minivan. I ask you, what kind of hitman rolls up in a freaking minivan?
Well, it's got heated seats and a DVD player and like a million cup holders.
Vinny man, just shut up, okay? Just shut up. That's all I freaking ask.
And we can watch The Princess Bride on the way. My kids love that movie. Who doesn't like The Princess Bride, huh? It's got that Andre the Giant in it and everything. It's hilarious.
One more word, Vinny man. One more word and I'm gonna have two bodies in the trunk by the end of the night.
Well, technically, the minivan doesn't really have a trunk, exactly.
Shut up, Vinny!
The math teacher that Sally and Vinny intended to address was Wilhelm Bell, applied mathematics professor at NYU. Seems he'd designed a computer algorithm that the feds could use to track Don Peach's money laundering operations. He'd been up late working on it when Sally and Vinny cornered him leaving the campus.
Hiya, Dr. Bell. How's it hanging?
Ahem. Dr. Bell, we are associates of a certain upstanding entrepreneur whose welfare you are unfortunately threatening.
Unfortunate for you, that is.
Upstanding entrepreneur, my lily-white keister boys. Salvatore, I expected more from you than this. And Vincent, really, is that your minivan parked in the handicap spot?
Geez, Professor, I got a permit. It's this bunion on my big toe.
Shut up about your minivan and your freaking big toe. Look, Professor, we're sorry about this, but business is business.
Honestly, Salvatore, your aim is as bad as your calculus.
Sorry, Professor.
Thank you. And this is where I come into the picture. The name's Marshall Paris, private eye specializing in the transmundane. I scratch a living out of the thin line between the victim who's still alive and the perp who ain't been caught yet. My office is in that natural urban gutter between the greenbacks on Wall Street and the red lights on Times Square, where you can still rent a motel room by the hour, and every other store is either a liquor joint or a pawn shop. For a guy like me, this is the place where opportunity knocks most. And it usually knocks with either the clack of stiletto heels or a really loud bang.
What the?
The office was empty. It was past closing time, but the only measurable difference between the chair in my office and the chair in my fifth floor walk-up was that the latter was 12 blocks east and it had started to rain. I sat back and tipped a finger of gin into my glass.
Gloria? Is that you?
Gloria was my last secretary. She'd quit the week before over a salary dispute. She had a dispute with the fact that I hadn't paid her in 2 months. It was too late at night for Gloria, though, or anyone else. Random noises didn't much unnerve me. As an investigator of the transmundane, I'd confronted more than a few unspeakable shark fins breaking the surface of reality. Still, I decided to take a quick look-see into the outer office. In my line of what sometimes passes for work, a guy can never be too careful.
Gloria? Marshall Paris Incorporated doesn't offer a severance package, I'm afraid. I'm still paying off that typewriter, just so you know.
Nothing. Gloria's desk was dark and empty. She'd even taken her little I Heart NY souvenir mug. What was a private eye's office without a secretary there to make the place look official, to type stuff and make coffee, and answer the phone in that obnoxious Bronx accent? In Gloria's absence, whatever clients there were had just had to find the office for themselves. This had been far less a problem than I would have liked. It should have come as no surprise to me, then, that the one client who did find his way to me was the only one who failed to qualify for my services in one key respect. He was the victim who wasn't, in fact, still alive.
Holy shit!
He was standing next to my desk, leaning against the wall, smoking a cigarette. He was as transparent and ephemeral as the smoke from his Pall Mall. He glanced over at me and then back out the window.
I'm sorry about that, Mr. Paris. It's evidently a ghost thing. What with the loud bangs and the moanings in the attic and whatnot, I don't personally see the point.
The ghost smelled a little like rotting pumpkins and mold, but he also smelled like a client. I made my way back to the desk, circling carefully around the far side.
The late Dr. Wilhelm Bell, I presume? I read about your unfortunate demise in this morning's paper. Looks like you shook the wrong hornet's nest, Doctor.
The ghost dragged on his cigarette and blew twin jets from his nose.
Mr. Fratelli is nothing if not predictable, Mr. Paris. I expected some such reprisal, although I did hope for something with a little more panache. I was, in any event, prepared. Being dead is a bit of a limitation, but clearly not an insurmountable one.
Clearly.
I settled back into my chair, eyed the glass of gin suspiciously, pushed it away an inch.
I understand that mathematics wasn't your only passion, Professor. Spiritualism isn't normally a hard scientist's cup of tea.
That's because most hard scientists don't often have an artist's imagination. I was not bounded by such limitation. It was that very imagination that fueled me to contrive the algorithm that eventually got me killed, after all.
And it was your interest in the occult that taught you how to stick around for a while afterward?
My grandmother was a mystic in the old country, Mr. Paris. Made quite a living for herself communing with the dead. She visited me herself the very night of her funeral, taught me what I would need to know when the time came.
I see. The only thing my grandma left me was a debt with her bookie.
I reached and shifted the glass of gin a few inches closer again.
There are certain restrictions, of course. I can allow you and only you, Mr. Paris, to see me, and the time frame of my haunting is limited, of course. I'm confident it will be sufficient to what needs accomplished.
Bell's ghost drifted to the client chair and settled silently onto it.
He dropped the cigarette butt, and I was bemused to see that it was the only substantial thing about him. I heard it thump lightly to the floor. He crushed at it, pointlessly, with his phantom Oxford.
You see, Mr. Fratelli and his men were too late in killing me, Mr. Paris. As of yesterday evening, my algorithm is complete. In the hands of the proper authorities, it can be used to track and map the Syndicate's financial empire. Fully implemented, there will be no such thing as clean money for Mr. Fratelli. For the first time ever, the police will have the power to track every transaction, every bribe, every payoff of his operation. If the Syndicate spends, they will be exposed. If they do not spend...
they suffocate. After all, money is the lifeblood of any organization.
Indeed, Mr. Paris. Even an organization as small and understaffed as Marshall Paris Incorporated?
I sighed. I'm actually an LLC, just so you know.
Fear not, Mr. Paris. I don't expect you to work for me out of the kindness of your heart.
That's good, because the kindness of my heart gets pinched every day by the landlord of my wallet. Still, I have to admit, I'm not too keen on earning the ire of the Syndicate.
Should my plan succeed, Mr. Paris, the Syndicate will be headless and broken. There is little to fear. You have my word.
As the ghost of a dead mathematician.
As a man who likes to keep all sums balanced on both sides of the grave.
I nodded. I still wasn't too clear on what this algorithm was really capable of, and I definitely wasn't excited about having Don Peaches Fratelli gunning for me. But the truth was, I needed the work. The professor was more than smart, after all. I knew from the newspaper that he'd been rich, too. A dead-paying client was better than no client at all.
All right, well, where to first, then?
Head down to the university. We need to get into my office before Fratelli and his associates find out where the algorithm's hidden.
He stood up, and I opened my bottom desk drawer for my revolver. The thing's as old as the hills, and probably wouldn't fire a slug if my life depended on it, which it just might. But tradition is tradition, and the old thing is basically a good luck charm. When I got up, slotting the revolver into my shoulder holster, Bell was gone. All that remained was the butt of his Pall Mall. I locked up, headed down to the alley where my Ford Fairlane was parked. I got in, started the old girl up, and reached to adjust the rearview mirror.
Holy cats!
Bell was in the dark of the back seat, a tall silhouette sitting bolt upright.
Look, I really wish you wouldn't just pop up like that.
Sorry comes with the territory, I'm afraid. Time and space are mere temporal constructs, Mr. Paris. It's very liberating being free of them. You should try it sometime.
Pardon me if I don't put that on my to-do list.
The professor's algorithm was hidden on a laptop computer in his office at NYU. We got in easily enough, and I found the office unlocked. The laptop was stored in a wall safe behind a portrait of Sir Isaac Newton, because even scientists have a respect for a narrative tradition. But according to the ghost of Wilhelm Bell, getting the laptop was only the first piece of the puzzle.
The computer is locked with a very special voice command, a series of disconnected words that I've written down in my notepad.
So, where's the notepad?
For safekeeping, I decreed it should be buried with my body. We must go to the cemetery and retrieve it, and you will read the voice command exactly and precisely as written in order to unlock the algorithm.
Why can't you just tell me the voice command?
I can't be expected to remember things like that. That's why I write them down.
I should have known things were going a little too smoothly. We were just leaving the professor's office when I spied Fratelli's two-man goon squad coming around the corner.
It's Paris. Get him.
Somebody had tipped them off that I was there for the goods, but who? Bell's ghost vanished. I tried to follow suit.
Sally, he's heading for the elevator.
Give it up, Paris. That algorithm's no good to you.
I made it to the elevator, but just my luck, it was going up. I found an unlocked office, pried open the window. I was four stories up, which I know from experience is exactly 3.5 stories higher than I'm willing to jump.
There he is.
It's all over, Paris.
I looked out the window again and saw a dumpster below. My options were to hope for the best with Fratelli's Goombas or try a creative emergency exit.
Holy...
By the time I got back to the fair lane, I was feeling about as fresh as a sewer rat in a porta potty. I made it out onto LaGuardia and dared to hope I'd shaken my tail. I was about to draw a sigh of relief when Bell appeared in the passenger's seat.
Nice escape, Mr. Paris.
Geez, don't you know how to knock?
Of course. Knock, bump, rattle chains, turn left here. The cemetery is only a few blocks away.
It was pretty rich taking orders from a stiff, but by now I felt I owed Fratelli a little payback of my own. We got to the cemetery at the stroke of midnight. Thematic necessity, Bell said. Melodramatic horse feathers, I called it. Bell led me to his grave and then vanished, leaving me to do the dirty work. The hole was still fresh, so it was pretty quick work digging up Bell's coffin. Something was feeling hinky to me, but I reminded myself that I was stealing paperwork from a corpse that I'd just dug out of the dirt. For the moment, I figured hinky was my operational baseline.
Phew. Sorry, Doc. I have to say, you look a lot better as a ghost. All right, here we go. Breast pocket, just like you said. Whew. Now to get this back to the office and deliver the goods to the cops tomorrow.
A pair of headlights swept over the graves, and I heard car doors slamming.
Ah, crap.
I had forgotten the first rule of being a gumshoe, which is that no matter how hinky things are, things can always get hinkier. I pocketed the notebook as a trio of silhouettes came into view, heading right toward me in the dark.
Mr. Paris, you should feel honored that I have come to finish this myself.
It was Don Peaches Fratelli in the flesh. He was carrying a machine gun, bold as brass, swinging it like a cane. His two goons were following close behind.
Hey, fellas. Out for a little midnight stroll? Walking off a few ricotta cannolis?
That is racial stereotyping, Mr. Paris. I have to say, I wouldn't expect that even from a cheap suit like you. But you did lead us to the professor's algorithm, which I intend to reverse engineer and use to make our operations completely untraceable.
It'll do you no good. The laptop's encrypted with a
secret voice command. So we hear. My associates and I are very good listeners, and you talk to yourself, Mr. Paris. That's a sign of mental instability, you know.
I wasn't talking to myself, you greaseball. I was talking to...
Just be a good boy, Paris, and read the professor's voice command. Then we'll take the algorithm and be on our way.
Look, I'm not gonna...
Play ball with us, and maybe you won't end up in one of these graves.
That was the third time I'd been interrupted, but this was no time for an etiquette lesson. I opened the professor's notebook, found the voice command. The words were complete gibberish, but I did the best I could.
Bello... In morbieris, non redibis, ibi aestimatus, lacum, mortuos. I can't make out this last letter. Oh, wait, it's Greek. You know, I actually know this one. Omega.
To nobody's greater shock than my own, Bell's corpse hinged upwards out of its open grave. Dirt pattered off the body, and the dead eyes opened wide, showing blank white orbs. The mouth cinched into a grinning rictus.
Mr. Fratelli, so happy you could make it to my little going away party. It is I who tipped you off that Mr. Paris would be here, and it was I who arranged for that special, shall we say, incantation to be read. I intend to have my revenge on you, Mr. Fratelli, and I've invited a few acquaintances who share my interests. Frank the Shank Donatelli.
The grave to my right suddenly disgorged a gangly figure in a black suit, lurching upright like a badly handled puppet. I backed away quick, stumbling over a gravestone in the process.
Godfather Guido.
A mausoleum door exploded off its hinges, and another figure shambled out, this one huge and blubbery, loose flesh sagging out of its burial suit. The story was that Guido was so fat he'd been buried in a piano case. His eyes were empty sockets, his mouth a maw of yellow teeth.
The entire Broyhill gang
half a dozen skeletal shapes vomited up from the ground, clad in rotting suits, bits and pieces falling off like confetti. The whole assembly began to close in on Fratelli, who raised his machine gun in shaking hands. Bell loomed before him, towering exactly like the morbid specter of vengeance that he was.
Say hello, Mr. Fratelli. I believe all of these men were once close associates of yours, until you addressed them.
A pair of figures shoved past me, nearly scaring the pants off me. But these were no vengeful dead goons. It was Fratelli's cowardly living goons, running flat out, their ties flapping.
Sally, don't you think we should stick around and help the boss?
Vinny Man, your minivans never look so good. Let's go!
Fratelli backed away, stumbling a little, but mustered his famous bravado.
You can't scare me, you bunch of undead freaks. I've killed you all once, I can do it again.
The bullet-riddled bodies encircled him, closing in. Bell grinned down at Fratelli, floating a foot off the ground, his arms raised like clawed wings.
You can't scare me. No bunch of zombie stiffs are gonna kill Alberto Fratelli.
No, we don't intend to kill you, Mr. Fratelli.
And that was the end of the case of the morbid mathematician. Well, almost the end. Things may change at the top of the food chain in the syndicate, but that don't matter much to the little fish at the bottom. Still, it looked like things were going to be quiet for a while in the New York underworld. And that was a welcome change. When I got the call from the executor of Wilhelm Bell's estate, I was a little surprised, but not much. Bell had been a math guy, after all. Huh. And math guys like to keep all sums balanced,
yeah, you can deliver right to my office.
Even from the grave. He'd left me 1,500 clams. For services rendered, the guy told me.
No, thank you.
I hung up, knowing that for Wilhelm Bell, all sums added up, and he could rest in peace, or some close facsimile thereof. As for Don Peaches, it didn't look like he'd be doing any resting at all for a while. According to the morning's paper, the Don had been found gibbering in the graveyard and been subsequently committed to Juniper Hill Sanatorium. The shrinks there were calling his condition acute guilt psychosis. I had a pretty good idea that I knew the real source of the Don's mental collapse. What he'd succumbed to was no attack of conscience, but a sobering and existentially unsettling visit from the beyond. All orchestrated by the mathematically precise, uncannily cunning mind of a certain mathematician with deep mystical roots. To a guy like Wilhelm Bell, when you solve for X, X equals revenge. Feeling flush for the moment, I sat back and drew the old revolver from the inside of my jacket. There's this old rule I heard about once, something about how if a gun shows up in a story, at some point in that story, the gun needs to be fired. I hadn't fired the old piece, or even had a chance to draw it for intimidation purposes. But the day wasn't over yet, was it? I snapped open the chamber, peered into it. The clack of stiletto heels sounded in the outer office, followed by a tentative knock on my door. I hoped maybe it was Gloria coming to beg for her old job back. Instead, the door eased open, and a different dame stepped in. This one had raven black hair, topped with a natty red pillbox cap, and the unmistakable smudge of tears in her mascara.
Detective Paris, I think I may have a case for you. It could be very dangerous.
Her eyes moved to the revolver cracked open in my hand, seemed to derive a certain strength from it. She squared her shoulders.
And call me crazy, Mr. Paris, but I think there might be supernatural forces involved.
I snapped the revolver shut, reholstered it, and stood up, giving her my most winning smile.
Come in, Miss...
Weld. Mavis Weld.
Well, Miss Weld, the supernatural is a forte of mine. I'm Marshall Paris, investigator in the transmundane. Have a seat, and tell me your story.
happy ending might be a bit too much to expect for our intrepid Detective Paris. But at least he lives to see another case. As do you, dear listener. Thank you, as always, for traveling the Gray Line. Do collect your bags, should you have any, and mind the closing doors. And take with you this sobering reminder that not every journey ends so neatly. The next time you ride with us, you may find yourself lost forever. Just one more story told on the forgotten backroads of the Gray Line. The Gray Line is written and produced by me, G. Norman Lippert. X Equals Revenge featured the voice talents of Juss Sargent as Wilhelm Bell, Jeannie Lynn as the Inevitable Dame, and you can probably figure the rest out for yourself. Thanks and greetings to our many new listeners. Do hit that subscribe button and favor us with a review featuring as many glittering stars as you can manage. Submit your town as a featured destination, if you dare. And as always, if you are enjoying the Gray Line, do tell all of your friends and a few choice enemies.